Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Ted O'Brien. This evening, we're going to be talking with two of the key people behind the celebration of Aliyah 3. Presented in the spring by Boston University as part of the Aliyah 3 ensemble, we'll find out who they are and what they're about. And the reason is simple. We have with us to discuss this, from the College of Fine Arts, the dean of the college, Jeffrey Babcock. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Ted. Nice to be here with you.
And also the director of the School of Music, John DeVario. John?
Ted, a great pleasure to be here.
In terms of music, Aliyah 3 has been associated with the university ever since I got here and reaches back more than 20 years. John DeVario, perhaps you could tell us what it is and what's special about the performance excerpts which we're going to be hearing tonight.
Its purpose, its mission is to play contemporary music that lends itself to rather broad definition, basically everything from Bartok to the present.
All right. What is modern classical music? Is there a contradiction between the words modern and classical? Or is it simply European and American academic sound production?
No, I think it's in this context. We are engaging musicians from both within the university community and family at the School of Music and from the wider community. Professor Antoniou does this in this organization. And it is to bring to the public the latest efforts of composers who are living, primarily, though we do play some music of those who have since passed. But there's a great emphasis on new current music, and the institution has a long history of taking very direct interest in providing support to gifted young composers who are just emerging, and that's a very key part of its mission.
Well, Dean, John, let's listen to an excerpt from what you tell me was a celebration of all kinds of good music in honor of Dr. Antoniou, and also to help the Aliyah 3 find a wider public. Oh, well, so let's listen to the first piece as a part of the celebration of Aliyah 3, composed by Fritz Kreisler. That's a name that's well known. It's the Scherzo Movement from Opus 6 by Peter Sazovsky on the violin. Mr. Sazovsky is a member of the faculty of the School of Music of the College of Fine Arts at Boston University. Peter Sazovsky on the violin at Aliyah 3, a magnificent piece from a magnificent player. He's the first or principal violinist for the Muir String Quartet, which has also been in residence. And I think this might be a good time to talk about what that means in terms of a school of music, John, to have the Muir String Quartet in residence.
Well, we're very fortunate to have a professional quartet in residence. It means that they're going to be doing a lot of performing at the university. They will oftentimes do or will devote a year to cycles of important works for string quartet, and there's a great string quartet literature, and I believe that in the upcoming year, and maybe Dean Babcock could contradict me if I'm wrong, but they're going to be doing the cycle of Beethoven quartets. Now, that's pretty special. You've got a first-rate professional quartet doing all of those fantastic pieces. It also means that the group, the members of the group, are going to be active as coaches of string ensembles, not just string quartets, maybe trios or quintets. And these are very experienced chamber music players, so our students will be able to benefit from that kind of teaching and that kind of guidance.
And coming back to the idea of ensemble, John, I think you were mentioning just a moment ago that this ensemble, Alia III, is a large ensemble, so that young composers who want to do more than a string quartet or a trio will find a venue.
That's correct. Alia is not as big as a symphony orchestra, but as new music ensembles go, it's one of the largest, which means that young composers who want to write something that's bigger than, a solo piano piece or a song, or as you said, a string quartet, they'll have an outlet. They'll have a venue for their work.
Our guests are Dean Jeffrey Babcock of the College of Fine Arts and John DeVario, who is the director of the School of Music. And we're talking about the arts at Boston University, especially music right now, and Alia III, which specializes in modern music, but whose recent Alia III performance last April broadened the venue somewhat in terms of the kind of music presented. Now, the next piece we're going to hear was composed by John Goodman, who also is the pianist, and consists of several poems of Dickinson, we're going to hear too, sung by Amy Schneider, mezzo-soprano. And before we go into that, perhaps you'd like to comment on the unusual nature of this. I was somewhat surprised to see this, and it's certainly very modern, I would think.
Yes, absolutely. I might mention that John Goodman is a member of our faculty, was for many years. He's actually just retired rather recently, and he is the pianist in this performance. He's primarily a composer, and he has focused, kind of specialized in the setting of poetry for voice and piano. He's been very much drawn to the poetry of Emily Dickinson. So this is actually a sampling from a much larger group of settings.
All right. So this is The Bell of Amherst, as heard and understood by John Goodman, composer and pianist, and Amy Schneider, mezzo-soprano.
Much magnificence to my sense, to understood you. Much sense, thus. Chain!
Composer and pianist John Goodman and mezzo-soprano Amy Schneider with two of Emily Dickinson's poems, the last that we heard, The Sky is Low, The Clouds Are Mean, and before that, Much Madness is Divinest Sense. If that doesn't qualify as modern music, I can't think of anything that does, gentlemen.
Oh, I think it certainly does, of course. And we've been very lucky to have John Goodman as a member of our faculty for as many years as he's been there. It's been decades, and made many contributions to our school.
Dean Jeffrey Babcock and John DeVario and I were talking about ALIA III. What is ALIA III's mission in a nutshell, Dean?
Well, it's really to support the creation and presentation of music of our time. And that's the principal focus of the organization. It's a resident ensemble at Boston University. And through the good work of this organization, it reaches out with an international reputation for its work on behalf of young aspiring composers and emerging composers, and each year with an international competition and a series of performances each year at the Psy Performance Center on the campus of Boston University.
You mentioned international. The Indian, the Chinese, Japanese, Middle East, are those conventions absorbed and included in the ALIA outreach?
Occasionally, although oftentimes in playing music of the cultures that you mentioned, this requires a whole other set of instruments, a very different kind of training. Certainly, these styles have been incorporated into some of the works that ALIA does, but the focus is mainly on composers who've been trained in the Western tradition. I might add, just by way of statistic, that over the years of its existence, ALIA has performed almost 1,000 compositions, and most of them have been works by living composers. So there's a tremendous breadth of repertory that they've done.
As you look at the next generation of students coming to study, these days many schools have, high schools especially, have eliminated the music education. And I guess I'm asking, how do you feel that youngsters can appreciate today's music when they're not sure about yesterday's, except for maybe the kinds of things they hear on the radio?
Well, I think you're right that there are real challenges out there in arts education of all kinds. Music certainly has had its share of difficulties in the past 20 or 25 years. But our environment really is designed to help our students not only become very proficient musicians, those who are interested in pursuing, for example, performance, which is what we're focused on right now, but also, I hope, to become strong advocates for the arts as they leave our school and take their place in the world, wherever that may be. We value that among our faculty, and particularly want to encourage our students to know that there may not be an audience tomorrow if they're not part of those who are advocating the importance of participation in and support through attendance and other ways of their arts organizations.
I can understand that. It's a difficult thing for if a student comes in not knowing the later Beethoven, it's difficult to understand Stravinsky, and if not Stravinsky, then Shostakovich, and then suddenly here we are today, and knowing that everything builds on everything that went before, that creates some difficulty. Do you deal with that in a specific way at the School of Music, John?
We deal with it really from several different angles. If a student is, well, almost all of our students study privately instrument or voice, and certainly they are encouraged to study, and their teachers will encourage them to study a range of repertory in their music theory classes, where they're introduced to various analytical methods. By the time they get into their sophomore or junior year, they're looking much more closely in a kind of analytical way at Stravinsky and Bartok. And then in their history classes, where this music is put in a more kind of a cultural context, they're going to be introduced to newer music from that angle. So they get it. They get it from different sides, and we certainly hope that they can synthesize these various aspects.
Our guests are John DeVario of the School of Music and Dean Jeffrey Babcock, Dean of the College of Fine Arts. I'm Ted O'Brien. You're listening to Boston University's School, Boston University's World of Ideas. We hope it's a school of ideas as well. One of the real gems of the College of Fine Arts, and I have to say it because I feel very strongly about it, is Roman Totenberg. And
indeed,
you spoke, Dean, of how people come together around support of the Alia III, and at the age of 90, he was there, John.
Absolutely. He's quite amazing. I have a particularly warm spot for Roman because he was my violin teacher. I've known him now for well over 30 years. And although the particular work that he performed on the Alia concert was not a piece of new music, over the years he has been a tremendous advocate of new music. You know that most violin virtuosos, certainly those of his generation, were content to play a kind of a narrow sampling of works from the Beethoven concerto to the Tchaikovsky concerto. And Roman was really quite courageous, playing lots of new works, commissioning works by composers like Mio, for instance. He's played compositions by Lucas Foss, who was on our faculty. Mm-hmm. He toured with a great one of the great Polish composers of the 20th century, Karol Szymanowski, and Roman himself was born and trained in Poland. So his connection with new music is a really very strong one, and he used to make his students study not only the Bach solo sonatas and the Mozart concertos and the Paganini caprices, but also a rather steady diet of newer repertory.
Well, and his mind has remained as young as, Pablo Casals or any other musician who has lived to great age. So let's enjoy now an excerpt from the piece that he chose for Alia III. It was Caprice No. 24 by Niccolo Paganini. And here is Roman Totenberg, violinist. Thank you. The music of violin virtuoso Roman Totenberg as part of the Alia III performance, and we're talking about music and the arts in general with Dean Babcock of the College of Fine Arts and John DeVario of the School of Music. And Roman has over the years served in another capacity, and that is to draw powerful players of all kinds to the faculty here. Is that fair to say, John?
Yes. Certainly he's been an important force in not only recruiting fine students, but also recruiting a first-rate string faculty.
And in addition to that, you wanted to speak a little about Lucas Foss, whose pieces you mentioned earlier that Roman had played.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, on last year's Alia benefit, Lucas and Roman played together one of Lucas's pieces. That was quite an incredible thing to see and to hear. Earlier in this season, Alia devoted a whole evening to the music of Lucas Foss. Lucas has been a major figure in the music of the 20th century. Now we're into the 21st mm-hmm. century, and he's got a milestone coming up. He's going to be celebrating his 80th birthday, and we are going to be celebrating him with a series of concerts and special events, culminating in a premiere of a work that he's written especially for our university orchestra.
Well, that leads to another question, and maybe Dean Babcock, you can handle this one. What is it about the arts that keeps people active in their great age? Long after most people retire, walk away from a job, a profession, a career, artists are painting and writing and playing.
It's a lifelong connection, and as an artist, I think almost by definition, one evolves over a lifetime. There's no end to your ability to grow as an artist, to expand your horizons, to find new meanings and connections, to explore new techniques and ideas. And I think it's the very reason that an artist stays with their art and is stimulated by it. And many artists find also that teaching gives them a sense of longevity and purpose well into their 80s and even into their 90s. And so it's not uncommon at all, and I think it's an important statement about the value of the arts in our lives.
Before we turn to a more general discussion of the arts, we have one last piece that we want to play from that Alia concert, and it's a celebratory fanfare composed by David Zubai, and it also includes the Terry Everson and the Boston University Trumpet Ensemble, including Peter Auricchio, Christopher Parks, Stephen Hand, Christopher O'Hara, and Robert Thorpe. But before we hear it, John, tell me a little about Terry Everson.
Yes, well, Terry is the chair of our brass department. We've been talking a fair amount about contemporary music and new music, and one of the special focuses of Terry's talents happens to be new music for trumpet. I mean, he has a command of quite a wide range of styles, but this is an area or a corner of the repertory that he has really explored quite thoroughly.
And he's a recent addition to the faculty, is he not?
Yes, that's correct. I believe that this is now his... See, all of the years kind of blend into one after a certain point, but I think he's finishing out his third year with us.
I myself have noticed that the commencements appear to be coming closer together as time goes by. Well, let's listen now to Celebratory Fanfare, composed by David Zubai and played by Terry Everson and the Boston University Trumpet Ensemble.
Thank you.
Celebratory Fanfare by David Zubai, played by Terry Everson and the Boston University Trumpet Ensemble as a part of the Alia III, a performance earlier this spring. Our guests are Dean Jeffrey Babcock of the College of Fine Arts and John DeVario, who is director of the School of Music. I'm Ted O'Brien. You're listening to Boston University's World of Ideas. I'd like, if we may, to broaden the discussion of the arts now, Dean, and to ask, what is the state of the arts in these days? We're coming off a decade, the 90s, where everybody decided that the old rules of commerce and capital and the rest didn't apply, and then suddenly we've come into more stringent times, and it seems that at least at the high school and grade school level, that the first thing they look to cut is the arts. But what, in your opinion, are we looking at in terms of an arts scene right now?
Well, I think it really depends on who you speak to, and because the field is so broad these days. There is so much activity in so many places. So to say that the arts are not healthy, I think, is really inaccurate. At the same time, let's be honest, the arts are in a time of considerable struggle as well, particularly on the financial side. The good news, I think, is that the level of creativity and the quality of performance, if you will, in every single area is exceptional. And so that's amazing. The diversity of expression, the diversity, the number of organizations that are out there that are pursuing at all different levels, at all different sizes, and in communities large and small throughout the country are pursuing arts with a passion and a rigor that's really quite extraordinary. There has been an explosion of growth in the past 30 years or so in the arts, and I think the stimulus of that growth can be attributed to the creation and of the National Endowment for the Arts in the 60s, and then also the expansion into state and regional re-granting institutions, state arts councils, local arts councils, not so much for the total dollars that they have done, but the way of generated interest among the corporate community and foundation community and so on. And there's been encouragement there that's been very important.
In one way, it seemed to come together all at once for me with the production of Die Fledermaus, which was staged by the Opera Institute, the Voice Department, the Boston University Symphony Orchestra, the Chamber Orchestra was a part of that. Mm-hmm. It seemed to pull together all the elements of acting, singing, playing, that with a very powerful impact.
Yes, absolutely. And Sharon Daniels, who directs the Opera Institute, kind of brought the production into the 20th century, took it out of its original Viennese setting and set it in New York in the 30s or 40s, which I have to admit, when I first heard about it, it sounded a little off-putting because that music, at least to me, or that whole theatrical experience, is bound up with a certain time and place. And yet it was extraordinarily convincing. It worked very, very well. So it was a real theatrical experience.
This is Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Ted O'Brien. You're listening to excerpts from Alia III, the university's ensemble group dedicated to providing a venue for composers of the 20th century. Now we have a series of tributes, first to Aaron Copland, then Ned Roram, and finally Vincent Eumanns.
We'll gather by the river. Jordan will
This is Boston University's World of Ideas. I'm Ted O'Brien. Tonight we're hearing excerpts from a celebration of Aliyah III, Boston University's ensemble group dedicated to providing a venue for composers of the 20th century. We heard Aaron Copland's At the River, Ned Roram's Early in the Morning, and Vincent Heumann's Without a Song, as performed by the Aliyah III Ensemble in Residence. Now, more music from Aliyah III. If this was not something that you had to do, then don't do it. And I see you nodding, John. And talk a little about, if you will, the life of the artist, of someone who has such a powerful need to play the violin in a world of very competitive violinists and to spend your life in it. What was it that moved you to make those kinds of choices?
Well, it's hard to give a definite answer to that. It's I think that that all of us who were involved in the, or most people who were involved in the arts, come to it at a very young age. And oftentimes it's not a conscious decision. You just realize at a certain point, you get up and you say, this is what I want to be doing. And although I started out as a violinist, and I'm not doing as much violin playing as I was doing 10 years ago or 30 years ago, you know, there are changes, there are certain shifts that a career will take. But the whole idea of being involved in the arts, once you're bitten by it, that's it. It stays with you. So, you know, everyone has their own personal experience, but generally, as I said, it's just a feeling that you get that you can't live your life unless you're involved some way, in some way with the arts.
It's a permanent condition, in other words.
That's right, and it's incurable.
Dean Babcock, I know something of your background in arts administration, the Boston Ballet, mm-hmm. a good deal of other things. Tell us a little bit about your choice for that sort of life.
Well, I came to music relatively young, as John did, and I actually started with the violin as well as my instrument, later shifting to piano and brass instruments, tuba, and took up bass. And in the later years of high school and then again in college, I was interested in arranging music, and I did a lot of improvisation as well, played with some jazz groups and continued to pursue composition as my passion in school. I did not actually think I'd end up as a music major in school, but it just kept drawing me back, and it continued to be my primary focus while I was there. So I ultimately continued on into graduate work and completed my work as a composer, and ended up really as an arts administrator through always being sort of the guy who was asked to organize this or that, and I kept doing it and found that I also enjoyed that part of it. But I think what draws us is the connection to that force, that creative force that lies in whatever art form any of us are interested in, and the deep personal emotional commitment that we make as artists and also that we receive as audience members.
What about an audience? How great a role does an audience play in the kind of satisfaction that you derive first as a performer and then as one who oversees performers?
Well, let me answer that or approach that kind of indirectly. Over the years, I've done a fair amount of pre-concert lecturing for the Boston Symphony. And in a number of these pre-concert lectures, I've been asked to interview a composer whose works were going to be performed on that evening. So I've interviewed about half a dozen fairly well-known contemporary composers. And sort of a standard question that I wind up asking them is, now, who do you write for? Who do you write for? How does the audience figure into this? And they almost to a person, they all say they write for the performer. You can only write for a performer, because if the performer is happy and the performer is really engaged in what it is that they're doing, the audience will be engaged. So it's an interesting thing to ponder.
It certainly is, Dean.
Well, I think the role of the audience, the informed audience in particular, for certain kinds of activities and performances, and the feedback from that audience is what really gives a performer the sense that they have connected and a sense of fulfillment. It's that reward at the end of the performance, that they've been appreciated, that what they have done has come across to that audience. But I think also many of us have found that one of the greatest thrills we can have is to perform for young people who are not knowledgeable audience members, but to bring them along and share the excitement of live performance with them in school settings or bringing students into performances. It's one of the most important things we can do. And those become truly life-changing events for young people. So I don't think any of us can do enough to engage youngsters with the arts. You just cannot overemphasize how important that is. And I think most of us involved in the arts see that as one of our primary missions, to engage young people and share that excitement.
Well, our guests have been Dean Jeffrey Babcock of the College of Fine Arts and John DeVario, Director of the School of Music. Any last thoughts, gentlemen, as we conclude this particular edition of Boston University's World of Ideas?
Well, we always welcome the public to come and see our students and faculty perform. They do so throughout the year, and there are over 400 performances a year on our campus. So many, many, many of them are free or very low cost, and we always love to have the public come and see us.
John?
Absolutely. I would affirm and second that motion, because since that's really what we're about. Some of the arts may be produced in isolation, but they're for people to hear, to see, to experience at all levels. So please, if you're out there, come and visit us. There's a lot going on at 855 Commonwealth Avenue.
Because the composer composes for the musician, but the musicians are playing for you.
That's right.
Dean Babcock, John DeVario, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ted.
Dean Jeffrey Babcock of the College of Fine Arts and School of Music Director John DeVario on the celebration of Aliyah III and the arts in general. For a cassette of Boston University's World of Ideas, call 1-800-909-9287. That's 1-800-909-9287. Cassettes are $15 and include shipping and handling. To learn more about Boston University's World of Ideas, visit our website at buwi.org. Tonight's program was produced by Vince Fairchild, with help from Keith Infantino, Tina Toby, and Mike Toda. Our web producer is Angel Cazelli. I'm Ted O'Brien. Have a good evening.
This is done.